35. It took a while for everything to get straightened out. First, Giant John had to be convinced that Maniac was not kidnapping his brothers. Then the brothers had to do some more trembling and clinging while John finished lambasting them for running away, which apparently they did about every other week. Then, when the brothers found out that their pizza person was none other than the famous Maniac McGee, the very same one who had blasted their big brother's fastballs to smithereens and finished him off with a home run frog, well, it took a good 5 minutes of rolling on the sidewalk to get all the laughing out of their systems, which, of course, got Giant John more than a little steamed, prompting Maniac, who didn't like seeing John disgraced before his little brothers, to say, "Yeah, but didn't John tell you what happened the next day?" And the brothers said, "No, what?" And Giant John said, "Huh?" And Maniac winked at John and crossed his fingers. "Sure, John, you remember, wink, wink, at the Little League field the next day. You said I was lucky that all you threw me was fastballs, because you weren't ready to reveal your secret pitch, the one you'd been working on, remember? Wink." McNabb nodded dumbly. And so I said, "Well, come on, I can hit anything, pitch it to me." And you pitched it, and I missed it by a mile. And you kept pitching it to me all day long, and I never even hit a foul ball on it. "What was the pitch? What was the pitch?" chanted the urchins. "It was..." Maniac paused for a dramatic buildup. "The stop ball."
"The stop ball?"
"Yeah, and you should have seen it. It comes right up to the plate, looking all fat and easy to belt. And then, just when you take your swing..." Maniac got into his batter stance and demonstrated. "It sort of stops, and your bat just whiffs the air." He whiffed at an imaginary stop ball.
"Wow,"
said the brothers, gazing up at their big brother. And so Maniac was invited to accompany the brothers McNabb to their home. Despite the cold, the front door was wide open, and Maniac could smell the inside before he could see it. The first thing he did see was a yellow, short-haired mongrel looking indecently up at him while taking a leak in the middle of the living room floor.
"Clean that up," John ordered Russell.
"Clean that up," Russell ordered Piper. Piper just walked on by. After closing the front door, which was surprisingly heavy, Maniac found a stack of newspapers in a corner. He laid some over the puddle to soak in, then gave himself a tour of the downstairs. Maniac had seen some amazing things in his lifetime, but nothing as amazing as that house. From the smell of it, he knew this wasn't the first time an animal had relieved itself on the rugless floor. In fact, in another corner, he spotted a form of relief that could not be soaked up by newspapers. Cans and bottles lay all over, along with crust, peelings, cores, scraps, rinds, wrappers, everything you would normally find in a garbage can. And everywhere there were raisins. As he walked through the dining room, something, an old tennis ball, hit him on top of the head and bounced away. He looked up into the laughing faces of Russell and Piper. The hole in the ceiling was so big they both could have jumped through it at once. He ran a hand along one wall. The peeling paint came off like cornflakes. Nothing could be worse than the living and dining rooms. Yet the kitchen was. A jar of peanut butter had crashed to the floor. Someone had gotten a running start, jumped into it, and skidded a brown, one-footed track to the stove. On the table were what appeared to be the remains of an autopsy performed upon a large bird, possibly a crow. The refrigerator contained two food groups, mustard and beer. The raisins here were even more abundant. He spotted several of them moving. They weren't raisins. They were roaches. The front door opened, and seconds later, a man clomped into the kitchen. He wore no winter jacket, only a sleeveless green sweatshirt, which ballooned over his enormous stomach. Tattoos blued his upper bodies. His hands were nearly pure black. Stale body odor mingled with that of fries and burgers coming from the Burger King bag he held. Dropping the bag next to the bird remains, he bellowed, "Chow!" and took a beer from the fridge. He downed a good half of it in one swig, belched, double clutched, and belched again. He had to know someone besides himself was standing in the kitchen, and, just as obviously, he didn't care. Two floor quaking crashes came from the dining room. "Geronimo! Geronimo!" Russell and Piper had taken the direct route via the hole. "What'd you bring, Dad? Whoppers?" "Yeah, Whoppers!" They tore into the bag like jackals into carrion. Plastic flew, fries flew. They both wanted the same Whopper. Gnashed between their tugging fists, the Whopper splurted sauce and cheese and pickle chips. Then it split. Russell lurched backward into the kitchen table with his half. Piper lurched backward in the opposite direction, and with nothing to stop him, sailed right through the cellar doorway and down the cellar steps. The final thud was followed by the truck horn blast of Piper's laughter. When Giant John ambled in, the father said, "Get the blocks." "No," grunted John, pulling out a pair of Whoppers. He tossed one to Maniac. "We need more," growled the father. John didn't answer. "We need more." "I heard." McNabb smashed the tabletop. Three fries and a bird wing jumped to the floor. "Now!" John walked out, nonchalantly munching. "I was busy." The rest of the night was scenes from a Looney movie. Scene: McNabb the father swaggers bare-armed out the front door, bellowing back, "Do our homework!" Scene: Maniac retrieves the wet newspapers from the living room. There are no waste baskets in the house. He finds a trash can in the backyard next to the pile of cinder blocks. He dumps the soggy papers in a can, which is empty. Scene: small turds of an unfamiliar shape appear here and there along the baseboards of the first floor. "Please don't be rats," Maniac prays. Scene: the cobras come in. They glare at Maniac, but Giant John tells them to lay off. They raid the fridge for beer. They smoke cigarettes. They belch and fart. They curse. Russell and Piper, kitty cobras, pop their own beer cans, guzzle, swagger, belch, smoke, curse. Scene: football game from the front of the living room to the back of the dining room. Except for space, it has everything a regular game has. Running, passing, blocking, tackling, kicking. There is little furniture to get in the way. Ordinarily, the windows wouldn't last 5 minutes. But the windows of this house are boarded up with plywood. Body-blocked cobras fly into the walls. The house flinches. Scene: a faint rustling noise behind the stove. "Oh, no, rats!" Maniac dares to look. It's a turtle, box turtle, munching an old Whopper lettuce. Woo! Scene: the boys' bedroom. Russell and Piper lie prone at the hole. They fire toy submachine guns, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, at the cobras heading out the front door. Piper jumps up and blows Maniac away, killing him at least 15 times. "This is how we gonna do it! Bam, bam, bam!" "The guns will be real," says Russell, still prone and firing, the stock of the toy gun tight against his cheek. "Yeah!" squeaks Piper. "Real!" He flops back to the floor, sprays the hole downstairs. Soon's they start coming in. Bam, bam, bam. "Who?" says Maniac. "The enemy," says Russell. "Who's that?" says Maniac. Russell stops firing long enough to send Maniac a "where have you been" look. "Who do you think?" he sneers. He points the red barrel of the submachine gun toward the bedroom door, toward the east.
The east end.
The heavy front door. Scene. Darkness. Silence. Sometime early morning, Maniac lies between the two brothers on the bed. Do cockroaches climb bedposts? Unable to sleep, asking himself, what am I doing here? Remembering Hester and Lester on his lap, Grayson's hug, corn muffin in the toaster oven, thinking, who's the orphan here anyway? Hearing as he at last lowers himself into sleep's deep waters, a door slam, a slurred voice, do your homework! Fearing, will I float? Chapter 36. The deal was, if Russell and Piper went to school for the rest of the week, Maniac would show them the shortcut to Mexico on Saturday. He figured if they all managed to survive till then, he'd come up with something else. On Saturday, the boys had their paper bag packed, and Maniac had a new deal. Go to school for another week, and he'd treat them to another large pizza. Besides, he said, crossing his fingers, this was volcano season down in Mexico. The whole place was a sheet of red-hot lava. Better wait till it cools down. They bought in, and they bought the same deal the following week. But school was still agony for the boys. It had to be worth more than a pizza a week. But what? The brothers thought and thought about it and soon began to realize that the answer was sleeping between them every night. Ever since the famous Maniac McGee had showed up at their house, Russell and Piper McNabb had become famous in their own right. Other kids were always crowding around, pelting them with questions. What's he like? What's he say? What's he do? Did he really sit on Finsterwald's front steps? Is he really that fast? Kids started giving them knots, sneaker laces, yo-yo, strings, toys, and saying, ask Maniac to undo this, will ya? Really little kids referred to him as Mr. Maniac. The McNabs are ate it up. In the streets, the playgrounds, school. The attention, not the pizza, was the real reason they put up with school each day. They began to feel something they had never felt before. They began to feel important. What a wonderful thing, this importance. Waiting for them the moment they awoke in the morning, pumping them up like basketballs, giving them bounce. And they hadn't even had to steal it. They loved it. The more they had, the more they wanted. And so, when Maniac tried to cut the next pizza for school deal, Russell answered, no.
No?
Echoed Maniac, who had been afraid it would come to this. No, said Russell. We want something else.
Oh, said Maniac. What's that?
They told him if he wanted another week's worth of school out of them, he would have to enter Finsterwald's backyard and stay there for 10 minutes, screeched Piper, who shuddered at the very thought. When Maniac casually answered, okay, it's a deal. Piper ran shrieking from the house. On the next Saturday morning, Russell, Piper, and Maniac set out for Finsterwald's house, about 7 blocks away. They took the alleys. Along the way, they were joined by other kids who were waiting, their eyes at once fearful and excited. By the time they got to Finsterwald's backyard, at least 15 kids huddled against the garage door on the far side of the alley. Maniac didn't hesitate. He walked straight up to the back gate, opened it, and went in. Not only that, he went all the way to the center of the yard, turned, folded his arms, smiled, and called. Who's keeping time? Russell, his throat too dry to speak, raised his hand. For 10 minutes, 15 kids, and possibly the universe held their breath. The only sounds were inside their heads, the moaning and wailing of the ghost of all the poor slobs who had ever blundered onto Finsterwald's property. To the utter amazement of all, when Russell finally croaked, time! Maniac was still there, alive, smiling, apparently unharmed. Even more amazing,
He didn't come out. Instead, he said, "Say, you guys, how about adding to the deal? If I do something else while I'm here, will you make it the next 2 weeks at school?"
What are you gonna do?
Stammered Russell. Maniac thought for a minute, then announced brightly, "I'll knock on the front door." Five kids finster-wallied on the spot. Several others screamed, "No, don't!" Piper went into some sort of fit and began kicking the garage door. Russell zoned out. Maniac took all of this to signify a deal. He hopped the backyard fence and strolled around front. The others went back down the alley and around the long way. They stationed themselves not only across the street, but almost halfway up the block. And even then, they squeezed together in a bunch, as though if they allowed any space between them, Finsterwald might somehow pick them off one by one. They huddled, trembling, to bear witness to the last seconds of Maniac McGee's life. They saw him stand directly in front of the red brick, three-story house, the bile green window shades. They saw him climb the three cement steps to the white door, the portal of death. They saw him raise his hand, and though they were too far away to hear, they saw him knock upon the door, and 15 hearts beats in time to that silent knocking. The door opened. Finsterwald's door opened. Not much, but enough so the witnesses could make out a thin strip of blackness. Would Maniac be sucked into that black hole like so much lint into a vacuum cleaner? Would Finsterwald's long, bony hand dart out, quick as a lizard's tongue, and snatch poor Maniac? Maniac appeared to be speaking to the dark crack. Was he pleading for his life? Would his last words be skewered like a marshmallow by Finsterwald's dagger-tipped cane? Apparently not. The door closed. Maniac bounded down the steps and came jogging toward them, grinning. Three kids bolted, sure he was a ghost. The others stayed. They invented excuses to touch him, to see if he was still himself, still warm. But they weren't positively certain until later, when they watched him devour a pack of butterscotch crimpets. Chapter 37. Thus began a series of heroic feats by Maniac McGee. At 20 paces, he hit a telephone pole with a stone 61 times in a row. When the once-a-week freight train hit Elm Street, he started running from the Oriole Street dead end on one rail and beat the train to the park, no sweat. He took off his sneaks and socks and walked, nonchalant as you please, through the rat-infested dump at the foot of Rayco Hill. The mysterious hole down by the creek, the one you would never reach into, even if you dropped your most valuable possession into it. He stuck his hand in, his arm in, all the way to the elbow, kept it there for the longest 60 seconds on record, and pulled it out, dirty, but still full of fingers. He climbed the fence at the American bison pen at the zoo. He had suggested this feat himself. Everyone else scoffing, and while the mother looked on, kissed the baby buffalo. So it went through February and March of that year, a feat a week. Too much of the town hearing about these things, it was simply a case of the legend adding to itself, doing what legends do. To Russell and Piper McNabb, it was a case of boosting their importance ever higher in the eyes of the other kids. Was it not at the brothers' direction that Maniac McGee performed these deeds? And who, after all, is the more amazing, the lion or the tamer? As for Maniac, he understood early on that he was being used for the greater glory of Piper and Russell. He also understood that without him, they would not be going to school every day. For the McNabbs, there was nothing free about public education.
A tuition had to be paid. Every week, Maniac paid it. And besides, he loved to meet the challenges they cooked up for him. And then one day, they gave him the most perilous challenge of all. They dared him to go into the East End.